Ahoy, Vachon! Or as the French say, Vachon. I'm Michael Shook, sitting in for Brian Brown, and this is The Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less. You are listening to KVSH, Kavish, not Kvetch, although we do that too, at 101.9 FM, the voice of Vachon, and we are coming to you live. Stammering, stuttering, and dead airspace, God forbid that should happen, are all part of the mix. Be advised that anything and everything uttered on this show does not reflect in any way the opinions of KVSH, Voice of Vachon, or our generous sponsors. We have been disclaimed, I think.
As we should.
But not abandoned.
When I say we, I mean the Brieflies. And that means our master of mix, magnanimous former Texan, Montana ranch hand, and all-round mood modulator, Truman O'Brien.
Yeehaw!
Yeehaw! Wow. I love it! We did a song at church this last... we're going to do it next week, I guess. Anyway, there's a line in there where it sounds vaguely like yeehaw, and it's all I can do to say the proper word.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah. Yeehaw. I'm sure Aaron and the congregation would love that.
Yeah.
To Truman's left is Bruce Hallman's empty spot there, empty chair.
Yes,
if you're listening, Bruce, we're thinking of you.
Absolutely.
When you're down there in the sun and we're here in the snow.
He's down there in the smoke. I get the feeling that Bruce's chair is not going to have any comment here, so we'll move on.
He's surprisingly silent.
he is reticent at times. He is in another time zone, so we move on to what would be Bruce's left, where we find online editor and political activist with Indivisible Vachon, Kevin Jones.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning, Kevin. And I actually did not stumble over Indivisible Vachon for
some. You know, it's sometimes we say saying an individual indivisible group is really one of the challenging things to say.
Yeah.
May that be your only challenge, love.
Yes. It just there's the verbal challenges.
That's good, though. It's like speaking with marbles in one's mouth.
Yes.
That can really. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what that does, except. Damages the enamel on your teeth or something, but
don't swallow.
But yes. To Kevin's left is the former semi-pro shortstop for the Midway Debutantes of Georgia, social worker and poet Lynn Cracker Kerrigan.
I love being known for something that I did 55 years ago. It makes me laugh. But I have learned that if a woman wants to bond with men, talk sports. And having been a member of several sports teams, I know it works.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we have a common base of knowledge over which to cross that great otherwise gender divide.
That hormonal something in there. There's a
batting, the catching, all of that.
I was looking
that.
For a word that was alliterative.
Hormonal moat?
Moat.
I like that.
That's probably appropriate.
It's not really alliterative, but it does work. Moat. I'm going to remember that.
It conjures up imagery. Maybe not. We can go on from there.
Well, let's. And we should have Susan McCabe here to the left of Lynn, but she's not here today with us.
She left Lynn's left.
Yeah. So. On we go. As always, there is no shortage of topics to discuss today regarding things we can do nothing about, but which nonetheless cause us concern or a degree of sorrow. Let me mention two. The possible presence of Asian giant hornets just across the border from us in Canada, and the passing of Buck Henry, one of America's most slyly talented comedians and writers. Any comments
those
or thoughts on that?
Those are not related things, are they? Those are unrelated, not correlated?
No,
to these and
I believe
bug?
Mr. Henry died from just being really, really old. But the Asian giant hornets, I don't know.
This is such a Michael introduction. I just love this. Michael, you're so good at comedy and distraction. And
no, I think of Asian hornets.
Yes, and my mind just explodes. It tunnels in there. through everything else that's going on. I really quite liked it.
Well, good.
Sort of like the killer bees, you know, from Mexico.
Yeah. No, they're from Africa.
Africa.
Africanized.
Oh.
Yeah. And there's one in the studio now.
Yeah.
It's something I find fascinating. I am something of a Nipponophile, and I read about these creatures years ago, and they are immense. They're almost 2 inches long. Their favorite food is honeybees.
Oh no!
Yeah, that's really bad.
How are they chocolate covered? I'm wondering.
They probably are pretty good. They're I'm sure packed with protein, like most insects, and something that big. Of course, they have a vicious sting, and about 30 people a year are historically are killed in Japan. Probably from allergic reactions, but a combination of encountering these guys.
But Kevin's on to something. You know, we take a threat and make it edible.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's actually a fellow that I met up in Canada several years ago who, my goodness sakes, in the studio.
Truman just brought up a photo of one of these wasps, which held in somebody's fingertips is as big as the palm of this
frighteningly,
guy's hand.
Now, that might be a child or the president. It's hard to know exactly for sure. But.
It does have an orange head.
An internet search will be, you'll be amazed. And probably Canadian tourism is dropping off quickly
even
now.
As we speak.
Right.
Well, of course, I don't know how much you folks know about wasps. But they do, when you go through your wood pile or you're re-roofing your house and you find those big ones with their jaws attached to a soft piece of wood, that's the female, that's the queen, and she's loaded with fertilized eggs. So all the drones die off. Springtime comes, temperatures warm up, out she goes, starts building a nest, lays a few eggs, and presto, a month and a half later, you got one of those big paper footballs out in your yard filled with wasps, which I actually like. I appreciate them.
Now, that's an efficient female. I really quite like their social structure.
Most insect world and the arachnid world as well is set up like that.
It's just one go, the whole population, the whole reproductive thing's done, and go on with the rest of your life. I don't know if that's the theme, but that's kind of what's coming to mind.
No, I also like the praying mantises, who are said to eat the heads off their mates once they are impregnated.
I think
right?
they just go ahead and crunch up the whole body too, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, you know, natural selection.
Yeah.
Obviously, it works.
Well, you know, not for everybody.
I'm looking around here. I'm seeing two. Myself makes three rather nervous males in the room.
Just call me Queen.
Oh, my
goodness.
Well,
we've always given you lots of room anyway.
Excellent.
She can still huck a ball pretty darn good.
That was hucking, not hawking.
Hucking, okay.
Yeah, huck. You know, that's what we used to say, huck. Huck that ball over to first, you know.
We didn't in the South. We've taken too many syllables.
Yeah.
What was it in the South?
Chuck.
Chuck
the ball. I think we heard that too. Yeah.
So there's some Southern culture coming through. A couple of different of us.
Yeah. That's great.
Well, when you were talking about the Asian bees chocolate.
Asian wasps in
chocolate. There was a fellow we met in Canada who's actually quite an entrepreneur, and we met in a boating trip, and at the time, the bloom of jellyfish was a phenomenal thing, and we're wondering, right, where this would go, and his solution was, that's protein. And people in the world need protein, so let's harvest those. And I don't know kind of like how many jellyfish you need to make like a bowl of soup or something, but because I think they're 99% water. But nonetheless, I don't think it went anywhere. But you just never know how people look at things differently.
And you lead me very quickly to my favorite article or information of the week, which is the eternal jellyfish. They have discovered a species of jellyfish that's very low in the ocean, and I wish I could remember its name, but it does not die. It regenerates.
It just keeps regenerating.
Yes, and they don't know how or why, but they want to study it to see, what we can learn from that. And I say eat it. And within one generation, we'll see what happens.
I wonder how many, this is the new delicacy. The black rhinos are safe now, right?
Yes.
They're going to be going after the tigers, all of that. Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, for all those.
For the long life.
Yeah, although I think that's an aphrodisiac, right? The black rhinos. So this would also
horns, there's a lot of crazy things about that.
Yeah, right.
Well, I like the idea. That shows the adaptability that humans are going to need as we go through the next 50 years or so. Yeah, why not?
Or just the next 10 months. But
just the next 10 minutes.
Eat those jellyfish. All righty. Well, we're going to move on now. Today is January 14th, 2020, the year of the optometrist, according to my friend Tom Lehman. And, of course, a big election year. Columnist David Brooks in yesterday's Seattle Times made what I think is a point worth considering, and that is, his headline said, "Trump has made us all stupid." Brooks posited that many are now part of a, quote, anti-Trump echo chamber that is becoming a mirror image of Trump himself, overwrought, uncalibrated, and incapable of having an intelligent conversation about any complex policy problem, end quote. He, Brooks, ends his column by warning the reader that though, quote, we fight viciously about Trump, underneath, a populist left-right curtain is descending around America, separating us from the Mideast, China, even Europe. The real high-risk move is the one both parties are making together, that if we ignore the world, it will ignore us. Which, of course, he says it won't. Thoughts on this?
I brought in that same article. I was really interested in it because much as I try to balance my life out, I do recognize my entire psyche is run by this ridiculous set of news cycles, especially that's happened this week, which really threw me for a loop. I just don't like the idea of wars, especially wars that... I don't know, threaten to destabilize an entire region of the world that we're already in too much trouble in. And, you know, it was interesting. I agreed that I have become stupid with all of the rage. It must eat my reasoning alive or something.
Yeah, well, we get those, the emotional responses.
Yeah.
There first and foremost, as you have mentioned, Lynn, you have some knowledge of that. What is the amygdala? Is that the part that kicks in, or
that's the basic brain. That's not even the fight or flight and all that. That's the how to breathe, how to walk, and all of that. So what I often talk about is the parasympathetic nervous system and the limbic system, where we get the fight flight responses, and we get the sort of hijacking of our higher order executive thinking when our emotions are wrought. We start making very quick decisions. You know, I'm reading right now that Malcolm Gladwell's Blink, which is The Power of Thinking Without Thinking, in which he's writing about the idea that we often make really good instinctual judgments without thinking about it. You know, very quick reactions that we have to make.
Mm-hmm.
But many things require a lot of thinking. And the trick, as I'm learning from his book, is to find that balance of what it is that needs long-term more thinking and what is it that we're overthinking. In my opinion, regarding what you're saying, you know, I blame the Senate for my wrath, I think, really, more than Trump, because I don't understand a lot of the support Trump has received, and I want to spread my venom, you know, my biting.
Your vituperative words there you're an equal opportunity sort of person.
No,
there.
I'm focused on Mitch McConnell right now.
Well, McConnell certainly is sort of that lurking. He's like a snapping turtle. People call him the turtle, but I think he's really like one of those big Mississippi River snapping turtles that, you know, can, I've heard of them easily able to bite a broomstick handle in half, just chomp, you know, and bang, it's busted.
There's a Facebook post coming to mind here for that, but go ahead.
Oh, it would be
awesome.
Just that, I think it comes down to power, of course, and there's so much power at stake there. And as long as it can keep doing that, they're going to keep manipulating things so that they keep the power flowing the way that they want. I've thought about Trump in lately, and especially after reading the David Brooks's column, there's a kind of a balance I think I have to reestablish, mm-hmm. where I perhaps skim the news or avoid being sucked into the biggest. Yeah, the biggest part of the downward spiral.
The maelstrom.
There the maelstrom. There, that's perfect. Thank you, yes. Truman. But if I can kind of stay at the edge of it and just keep myself well-informed, yet without being drawn into that and reminding myself that he is a reality TV show person, and this is, as more than one person has pointed out, this is how he does being president.
Yeah. I think he likes to distract, and, you know, this is the week of the impeachment information coming over to the Senate. This is the night of the Democratic candidate debate.
Debate, right.
And so there's all these other very important things for our democracy happening right now. And, you know, to me, this is part of his effort to throw enough things at the wall to see what sticks and gets our attention pulled away. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right, Michael. We can't afford to let everything become reactive and you know, angry when we've got to make some serious, thoughtful decisions.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't have a chance to read the article, so but I'm curious if Brooks' theory was basically that we're so focused now on this new news cycle with in you know, we're sort of navel gazing and taking our eye off the ball. Is that kind of the main?
That is sort of the gist of it. He says, he writes here, for example, he says there is a complex policy problem at the heart of this week's Iran episode. Iran is not powerful because it has a strong economy or military, and that's what I understand. I mean, they're not a direct military threat to anyone but their immediate neighbors. And not so immediate neighbors. Israel's a little ways away, but as the missile flies, not very far at all. It is powerful because it sponsors militias across the Middle East, destabilizing regimes and spreading different forms of genocide and sectarian cleansing. This is what his point is that these are things that require thoughtful, careful deliberation.
Well, it's intriguing in that while I have to admit that my reading of The Economist has sort of fallen somewhat by the wayside because of the last 3 years of activism, I think some other things that I see are awareness raising around policies that are global issues, like a ban on Muslims traveling to America and immigration policies at the southern border, mm-hmm. And certainly awareness of not only Iran and the nuclear deal, which many people probably had very little awareness of until recently, the North Korea. And so it's kind of intriguing to me because I think while there's a focus on the current administration and there's a lot of stupid to go around on that topic, I do think it also has raised a level of activism. So I'm kind of curious where he may come down on that thought.
I was going to point out earlier that I, no pun intended, but I really do think we dodged a bullet on Iran with them mistakenly shooting down the Ukrainian airliner, because that changed the whole dynamic of that discussion. And mm-hmm. I think
It deterred their aggression because
I
of
do.
That error?
I do. I do. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're darn lucky. I mean, I feel bad for the 176
sure.
getting whacked, but I think it may be derailed a very big response from those guys.
Mm-hmm. You know what I wondered about so much was why in the world his security team, Trump's security team, would have even presented the option of taking out this guy when they didn't think he would pick it, and it was the most extreme thing that could have happened that would obviously lead us into some type of warfare or brinkmanship. Yeah, you know, for which he's woefully unprepared. And I just don't quite get how anybody could imagine that could end well. So I would agree that for us it's deferred a lot of those bigger issues that we have on sanctions and on the idea of religious freedoms and intolerance versus tolerance and regions, you know, zones of influence. Right. It seems like they have now been encouraged to say we need America out of Iraq and all of that. And, you know, I watched Trump then tweeting, you know, this photo of Nancy Pelosi in a headscarf and Chuck Schumer in a turban, you know, thinking really if you do dissent, kind of reasoned dissent, it is not the equivalent of joining the enemy. It's trying to have a some kind of a worldview that's
That's part and parcel of his whole thing. Again, that goes back to, again, what I think David Brooks was trying to point out there is that he is deliberately inflammatory, and we've said this many times on the show. This is what the bullying sort of disruptive kid does all the time. You know, the 13-year-old who's got something he has to prove, and does these things that are just outrageous like that, just to get people fired up. Mm-hmm. And of course, what came to mind as I was reading the article was, wow, yeah, that old old adage. So I don't know how old, since Facebook came around.
Yeah. Oh, old.
Yeah. It's ancient.
It's going over the horizon.
Don't
now.
Feed the trolls.
Right.
And I think that's how Trump's presidency is the troll presidency. And that's what he feeds on. As far as the security people, the NSA and top chiefs of staff and all that in the military, what I read was that is pretty standard, is to go and present. It is the president, the office of the presidency. And so they have a responsibility to present the full array of options. And what I read was that they were flabbergasted that he chose the one that he did. And that may have been foolish on their part to think that he wouldn't, but I'm not sure anyone knows how to deal with someone who does things the way he does.
Yeah, I'm curious what people think, and somewhat I'm struck by the irony that just as you're describing, right, the general officer staff presents these alternatives to the leadership. So in other words, they're planning a kinetic or aggressive action. And the rationale for removing this high-level person was that they're planning aggressive action. Mm-hmm. So is that hypocrisy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
what generals do.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
That's what generals do.
Yeah. That's what that is. And our armed forces and security agencies do the same thing with maneuverings in different ways. I guess sometimes it's...
Yeah. Well, I don't want to create a false equivalence here.
No.
Don't get me wrong.
No.
But it's a matter of finding excuses to justify actions in the lack of real concrete evidence of an imminent crisis. And that seems to be the situation. Of course, they targeted multiple people as well, and some failed. I think in Yemen, one of the targets was not successfully prosecuted. It's curious in my mind, right? Is that what is the motive? Was there really a threat, which doesn't seem to materialize? Goes back to the weapons of mass destruction. For sure, they're there, and they weren't. So you know what is the motivation?
You know, I mean, to respond a little bit, I read this morning in the paper that Trump actually said, well, it doesn't matter whether there was imminent threat because of his background. And, you know, I just try to fall back on ethics and on the rule of law and these systems that should be being designed to curtail extreme activity on our part. And to have such a really disruptive, kind of very strange attempt to kind of run the world and through anger and through now airstrikes and all of that just feels to me, you know, like in the social work world, in the psychology world, you know, we say that underneath anger, there's always pain. and hurt and fear. And I don't think that's just Trump's. I think that is seriously Trump's from his own background. But I think that, you know, the people that are supporting him are, and we're all terrified of the loss of the American order. I mean, I think we have been at number one since the end of World War II. And with globalization, all that balance of money in the economies and all of that is shifting all around. And nobody knows how to run a global economy, and people are getting left out, and it's flipping terrifying.
And I think that's a good point, but I think we don't need to panic, though. We don't need to be as terrified as we are. I recall Bruce's words from previous shows where he's talked about the America is not going anywhere. We're still the largest economy in the world. We're still
or at least a close second
with, and we still lead the world in so many different areas. I don't think we need to be too concerned. Our empire is shifting and changing. If we had thoughtful, forward-looking people in political office who were able to see that larger picture and say, okay, let's take advantage of all these things that are happening and let's find ways to steer this to our advantage. I think that's kind of, again, that's kind of what David Brooks was getting at, is that there are a lot of subtle things and not so subtle things happening that could have been addressed. And one thing that comes to mind is, excuse me, in Tehran there, Truman, your comment about those, the shooting down of this airliner, holy cow, that drew thousands and thousands of people into the streets. And now we have big demonstrations here, but those folks at best are risking imprisonment and beatings.
Absolutely.
And at worst, they're being shot. So for them to be that worked up,
mm-hmm.
if we had a policy there that was less concerned about making a big show with, you know, blowing someone up, and more concerned with a longer sort of chess game approach to feeding that, helping those people there in Iran.
It actually kind of makes me think of the short-term, like, profit thinking, which is so characteristic of American capitalism, is also making us stupid. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think that we can characterize a relaxation of tensions between us and Iran, I don't know that I would be counting on that, right, in terms of the long game. So, and I don't think the administration is either, removing people from the country, staffing up the military. This notion that we're safer now is, frankly, pablum. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It remains to be seen what's going to happen in the coming months.
Yeah.
Can I just say,
sure.
I appreciate you bringing Bruce and his long view into the conversation. Bruce, we've internalized you. Isn't that wonderful?
We're trying to.
Thank goodness.
And I didn't mean to say that I was, acting on my panic all the time. I think there's a difference between feeling things and then backing up, as I said, and kind of trying to think in a broader, different way. And what I'm saying is that I totally agree with you that we need more strategy, less tactics, more strategy, you know, the bigger picture and mm-hmm. the longer goals and objectives. And the part that I do remain concerned about is, because I've been reading the newer book, Saudi Incorporated, and then I went from that to a book I actually had on my bookshelves called The Prize that was written about the early American development of all of our oil companies. And boy, it makes the point of America kind of being built on oil and gas mm-hmm. energy. Structurally, economically, you know, our whole systems are developed on roads and gasoline and petroleum products and mm-hmm. all of that. And we may be underestimating the challenge it will be to divest from that and go to more sustainable energy sources, even though we must. It's the only reason I can figure out that the Senate and people that are smart and charged with governance are lagging in this mm-hmm. bigger worldview. I think if you have special interests that fund you to do your job, mm-hmm. it's much harder to see the big picture.
Yeah, but as I've said many times, we talk about, oh yeah, fracking is so bad and blah blah blah, but man, our economy is driven, as you said, by petroleum. I mean, mm-hmm. all of the plastic. Buck Henry had
the whole world.
Plastics.
Yeah,
huh?
Exactly. I mean, the Graduate.
Exactly.
That's right. That's what I was going to bring up as well, yeah. Truman. Is that I'm not a big fan of the byproducts of oil, but we. in the sense of the pollution.
Yeah. But I'm wearing a fleece vest.
Exactly. Sure. And I think you said this, Truman, sometime in the last years on the show. Just look around the room.
Oh, yeah.
We are so dependent on products derived from oil.
So here's my thing. I think where Trump is making the biggest mistake is cutting down on all the research and taking away the research dollars. That is incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
And taking away the research on the climate. You know, I don't know how much we can affect the climate personally, and I have no idea. But to stop looking at it is really stupid.
And that's the kind of thing that that made America the empire that it is our investment in innovation. Yeah. Exactly.
And
why we still have thousands of people coming to here to go to our universities.
And even if you're a climate change denier, to not look at the possibility of what's going to happen with rising sea levels is absolutely ludicrous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, good Lord. Yeah. The military is doing it. I mean, they were doing it, and I don't know if Trump's got a stop to it, but if you look at Shishmaref is a little village up in Alaska. These folks are washing away because of the tides.
Already,
it's fallen into the ocean, the whole darn village is.
Yep, it's a flooding or it's burning.
And look at I just went blank. Not Vienna. Vienna. No, not yeah. Vienna.
Oh, Vienna.
Venice.
Is flood.
Venice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. You got the V.
Yeah, I got the V, but the rest of it went away.
So I think, you know, this is really intriguing to me because, yes, there's a huge amount of our economy that's invested in the oil and gas industry and the fossil fuel industry. But there's a small piece of that with plastics, which is probably not going to create the global warming conditions. It's the putting carbon in the atmosphere, mm-hmm. right, which is the thing.
Right.
And it's easy to do the look at the chart of growth of carbon in the atmosphere and global temperatures. And if you can't see a correlation there, then the year of the optometrist needs to be reinforced. In terms of research, there's a clean energy economy that either all the scientists are wrong and all the species will survive, and Australia burning up is an anomaly, just a passing thing that won't happen anywhere else. And if you believe that, then I've got property in Florida you'd love to see.
There's capitalism for you right there.
There you go. But the thing of it is about investment, because I work for Boeing and for a decade did new product development, and we had research and development funds. But the company also had a research division that looked globally at who was getting patents and how many patents and in what areas were they getting patents.
Really? And that's interesting.
Yeah. And it's publicly, you know, we have to file for a patent. And not every patent is, you know, a gold mine. But you mentioned we were the number one economy. And I think in purchasing power parity, I think they call it, we are now second to China.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly, the research on where the patents were, China. Huge numerical disparities. And then we talk about industries and being able to produce products that are well designed and safe, and we understand the margins, and as we get more competitive in terms of the technology requires competition, because if you can't keep up on the technology front, then the next company's gonna go there. Mm-hmm. It'll be lighter, mm-hmm. faster, cheaper, what have you, mm-hmm. right? So that investment, and when we then turn away from that, and we can look at other industries just locally, where there's a dearth of investment and profit-taking takes over, mm-hmm. and the mentality is more the capitalist profit motive as opposed to the long-term game. So these long-term, short-term thinking and stupid or not stupid all kind of weave together into that mosaic that that I think says that we do need to have that continued investment in technology. And we need to be inviting of everybody who can come and contribute to that. And right now, we don't have that decision-making going on. It's more exclusionary.
Yeah, well said, Kevin.
Well
yeah,
said. We should type that up and distribute it. Okay. You know, but
it'll be recorded.
There you go. Reminded by what you said, comes to mind that William and Kate put out a call for a new climate
William
contest.
And Kate.
The Prince of England and his wife, eventually king.
The mother and father of Archie, right?
Exactly.
If I understand right?
Don't conflate Harry and Meghan's exit.
I am
because
so
that
out
got
of
all
the loop.
The press.
Okay, okay.
The inline king.
There you go. Okay, thank you.
Did put out a call for a climate contest in the UK. I don't know if it goes beyond, but anything to me that gets everybody involved in thinking, so what could we do? Mm-hmm. Our children in schools, everything, mm-hmm. you know, to be focusing on it is, a big step towards coming up with something different.
Yes. Well, we've got... this is interesting because right now we are tremendously dependent on oil, natural gas, or coal for electricity generation. And people say, well, we got a hydroelectric here in the Northwest. It's like, well, yeah, we do, but we're paying an enormous price in our ecosystems for having those massive dams there and everything. Mm-hmm. Those are problematic.
And that is, of course, largely a sunk cost to the environment. But yes, I agree.
Yeah. So I've been reading some stuff lately, a couple of people saying, you know, nuclear power plants are being built, you know, they're capable of building them far more efficiently now, far more safely. And if they're situated properly, like not next to an ocean in an earthquake prone area like Japan, once they're up and running, they're great. And they have on the horizon, I'm astonished to have read this, but they have on the horizon, they think perhaps within the next 10 years, a fusion reactor, which takes care of the waste problem.
Yeah, yes, but if you do comparative costs of the various costs, levelized cost of energy is what they call it, mm-hmm. and wind and solar and oil and gas and nuclear, I can tell you which ones are way cheaper, and the nuclear is the highest cost option that you have. So not to say that there aren't options, because there really are, but also looking at what are those sort of affordability and mm-hmm. reliability and other factors. There is now apparently a company, and I don't remember the name, going through the approval process for the largest solar installation in the country.
Wow.
There's a plant in Italy, which is running on all hydrogen fuel, which is generated from electrolysis as opposed to being pumped out of the ground.
Cool.
There's things like pumped hydro, which they're looking, I think it is in Kittitas County, where they can basically pump water when you have, you're running water over the dam so the salmon can get upstream. And the turbines are running, but nobody's using power overnight in the summertime, if you will, because, you know, it's warm outside. So use that energy to pump water up to a reservoir. And then when there is a demand, let that water run back out of the reservoir through a turbine, maybe back into above the dam. So it runs through two turbines on the way. So mm-hmm. there's really lots and lots of different alternatives.
So there's some of that innovation. There's where that R&D comes in again.
And that's where Absolutely. The hope comes, so that people don't have to be living in fear or feeling left out of whatever is shifting and changing in the new global economy. And I was feeling my blood pressure go down, Kevin, as you were talking.
That's good.
Just listening to ideas that can that, you know, they're not on my radar. I don't know about them. I don't know how they can be built and replace things. But what I hope is that Mitch McConnell and the Senate, please listen to this kind of thing. You don't have to be stuck in the past
and force
everyone else to be feeling your, you know, tactical disapproval of all of that.
Yeah, I think we'll lurch through all this somehow. I don't want to say I'm an optimist, but when I look back over history, it's just humans do that. We lurch through things. It's not always very pretty sometimes, but we plow through it somehow or another.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, it's intriguing to me that locally now the session we're in day two of the 2020 legislative session. There are still a lot of work to be done in environmental legislation. If people want to take action, they can actually sign up to get legislative calls to action. So when a bill lands in one of our legislators' committees, you get an email to say you can pass that on. You can go to get out the vote at indivisiblevashon.org to sign up. Who put that in?
No, that's good. That's good.
And I think that at the federal level, right, it's really challenging. But if we build the right models at the state level, and then we get the right leadership at the federal level, we need the models. Mm-hmm, we need to have the infrastructure. We need to have the conversations about what's the right kind of legislation, what's the right policy. Those are complex things.
Mm-hmm.
And getting that right is important. And that's where the states can be the incubator for that future.
Building that platform.
Absolutely.
From which to spring forth into action and see some really good fruits from that. That's great.
Sure. Yes.
I so agree. And thank you for saying it in that way, because actually that kind of mimics the microcosm of anybody's argument anywhere. You know,
there you go.
The idea not only of there's a hopeful option, but to try it.
Mm-hmm.
Try it somewhere and see.
I'm going to jump in here and say that I'm looking out the window and I'm seeing the snow come down.
Snow,
and we just happen to have a wonderful song.
Actually, we do.
Version of it by the inestimable Dean Martin. Take it away, Dino.
And while that's coming up, real talk right after this, Brown Briefly at noon, we will be talking about aspirational values for 2020 and how people can make those aspirational values come true. So I hope people can stay on board after we hear Dean.
Huzzah!
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought me some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low. Let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. And the fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. But as long as you'd love me so, let it snow and snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you really grab me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. Oh, the fire is slowly dying.